Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah.
Hi, fellow tennis fans. This is Staven Shah from a rainy Antwerp, Belgium, and you're listening to the absolutely sensational Tennis Podcast.
Hello, folks, and welcome to our final tennis podcast of 2021. Don't worry, 2022 and all that it may hold is not that far away, which means that more podcasts aren't that far away. But for the glory that has been 2021, this is your last remaining hit of tennis podcast fun. It's guest edited again by Mike Lee, who did a stunning job of guest editing last week's listener question special. So he's come back for more fun and he's done a stellar job as well. We've got brilliant questions again this week. Thank you to Staven, who we heard there in our intro in rainy Antwerp. I can tell you that it's also rainy in London. How are things looking in Solihull and Sussex, folks?
I can only see a wall out my window, so I can't really tell.
Probably for the best, David. I mean, things are grim in the UK right now. Blanket grim. Can you confirm, Matt?
Yeah, dreary, overcast, grim.
A reflection of the state of affairs in the nation. But it's all fine. It's all fine because we've got the tennis podcast, we've got tennis, we've got one another. Billie Jean's just come and sat on my shoulder. Things are fine. And David's told me I'm not allowed to mention the mascot until the end of the show because he doesn't trust me not to spend 5 minutes on Slugger. But just to tease you, it's a good one, folks. Slugger is a good one. Okay, before David has a hissy fit at me and we have to halt this recording, I shall move on to Matters listener questions and Mike's selection for this week's show. So without further ado, our first question is, with all the majors using different methods of resolving their final sets, rank them from your most favourite method to your least favourite method and why? Ooh. David's grinning. Matt is moving the microphone closer to his mouth. Who would like to go first?
I'm happy to take this. I feel strongly about this.
Go. Off you go.
And I also have a different answer depending on whether it's best of three sets or best of five sets.
Yes.
I'll start with best of three. My ranking would be number one, the French Open, play it out, no tiebreak. Then it would be the Australian Open, tiebreak to 10 at 6-all. Then it would be US Open, tiebreak to 7 at 6-all. And then it would be Wimbledon, tiebreak to 7 at 12-all. For best of five, I would say my favourite is the Australian Open, tiebreak to 10 at 6-all. Then it would be US Open, tiebreak to 7 at 6-all. Then it would be French Open, play it out. And then finally, again in last place, it would be a tiebreak at 12-all, which is what Wimbledon has. And the reason why that one comes last for me is that it just doesn't feel like the right climax. I think if you've got to 12 all, you want to see a break of serve at that point. That's the fascinating element there. Can you break serve? And if it ends up in a tie break, you sort of think, well, why didn't we do this an hour ago and have that brilliant climax there and then? The reason I distinguish between best of three and best of five is I think most of the time, if you get to a 6-all in the third set, the match hasn't, you know, most likely it's not gone on for a ridiculous period of time. I want to see a breaker serve. I think that's fascinating. But I do think best of five, especially given schedule concerns, I think it's sensible to stop those matches at that point in the fifth set. And I think a tie break, especially to 10, is a great climax.
Yeah, I think I agree. I mean, I definitely think of the... I've always enjoyed a fifth set tiebreak, personally. I like it as a climax, a real pointed climax to a match, a crescendo. And while I wasn't necessarily... I was somewhat unmoved by the 10-point tiebreak at the Australian Open when it was introduced. I actually really like it, and that is my preferred scenario at the end of a best of five set match. I agree with you, Matt, about Wimbledon. I thought it sounded like a really good idea at the time, but now we've seen it play out a few times. It does feel like neither one thing nor the other. It doesn't sort of quicken things up enough to justify the removal. Not quicken things up, it's about more than that. It doesn't put a fine enough point on the match in order to justify the removal of, you know, what you gain from watching two players slug it out and have to secure that break of serve. So I think actually in practice, I don't love the normal tie break at 12 points all. I've always quite liked what the US Open have. I think it's just pipped by the Australian Open because just the 10-point tie break's cool, and I think it clearly works. I think, yeah, same as you, my preference in women's tennis at the moment would be the French Open scenario. You know, it feels wrong to be curtailing a women's match because, you know, the best women's match I want to bet women's matches, I always want more of them. Three sets is never enough. So sort of the more of them, the better. But I feel bad putting Wimbledon in last place for both.
Well, blame John Isner.
Yeah, well... Yeah, because I really, you know, I see what they've tried to do and I see how on paper it looked like a good idea. It's a bit unfortunate for them, but I think it's just not quite in practice panned out as great as planned. But, you know, there we go. David, different feelings?
Yeah, I would treat them both the same in terms of which one I would go for. I would still, if it was up to me, be putting women's matches at best of five, certainly from quarterfinals onwards anyway. But even within the three-set format, I think we now need tie breaks in the fifth or the third set, the deciding set. I think you need to have that in this day and age. And I think that's
a bit of a change for you, David, isn't it?
Well, I am somebody who used to love long matches for the ridiculousness of it all. But I think we have to be able to adapt at least to some degree and have an end point to a match. Yeah, I don't really feel comfortable with the... I'm not great on the Wimbledon one either, because I think once you get to the point of 12-all, you're almost... I think players are bearing that in mind, a bit like a team nearing a penalty shootout in extra time. Some teams just think, actually, we're not going to try and win it in extra time. We're going to wait for the penalty shootout. And I think there's probably a bit of that in the 12-all thing. And I don't like that. I'd rather, if it comes to it, I'd rather have the French Open style, I think. But ahead of them both would be Australian Open first for both. 6-all, first 10-point tiebreak, and then second US Open, third French Open, then fourth Wimbledon.
How do you feel generally about them all being different?
I would rather they choose one and we're all the same. Personally, I'd be happier, I think. And I think that would be helpful for the tennis fan. I don't think it's great, the tennis fan not really knowing. I mean, or having to have done a bit of homework or, you know, there's going to be confused people watching.
I think it's fine for us. It's kind of a fun novelty for us, you know, really nerdy tennis fans that they're all different. But I always feel sorry for the more casual tennis fan. I always imagine their reaction, just trying to get their head around it all and try to understand it. And, you know, I just don't want to be alienating those fans. And I don't think I don't think we gain enough for it to justify the cost to the casual fan of it all being different and confusing. That's my feeling about it. I feel bad for Wimbledon with us all putting them last.
Mm. I mean, I don't hate it.
No, nor do I. But it is just not. It's just not quite, is it? It's just, yeah. And it is all John Isner's fault. And I'm glad. I'm glad we're all agreed on that. Okay, next question comes from Dot Tyne on Twitter, which is an excellent name. They say, of all the matches you've watched or commentated on, which one holds the most significance for each of you personally, for whatever reason, and why? I'm just going to be really boring and jump in here with an extremely boring and obvious answer, and I've tried to think of something more interesting or quirky or unexpected, but it would be arbitrary because... it's Emma Raducanu winning the US Open, obviously, for me. And Mike, I mean, I hope I'm just at the start-ish of my career, but it might very well always be that, because we've never seen anything like that and we may never see anything like that again. And the fact that I was the presenter bringing that to the British public is something I still can't quite wrap my head around. And I'll be okay with it if that is never topped in my career. And probably Emma Raducanu feels the same. She's more likely to top it than I am, probably. But yeah, sorry, that's really... I don't think that's recency bias. I really don't. It was incredibly special and will live with me forever.
Hmm. Yeah, I think for me as a radio commentator, I would pick two different matches. One, because of its significance and the fact that I just happened to be the commentator at the point when it felt like everybody was listening, everybody cared in the country. And that would be when Andy Murray finished the year number one in the world in 2016 and he beat Novak Djokovic. And I know that we were on, you know, national radio in the afternoon and so often, and this goes back to what we were discussing in the last show about me listening back and cringing at things I've said or things I've done. And this was one of the rare occasions where I listened back and I thought, yeah, that was all right. That was okay. And you know, you don't know whether you're going to get the words right or not. And on that day, I thought I did. So,
did you buy yourself a trophy or two?
Quite happily do that, you know. I'm not sure how I'd word the trophy. Well,
no room on the shelves, David.
No, what would all my predictions wins from the 1 year when I bought two? But no, I would say that one. And, you know, it was just such a struggle and he'd been trying for so long and, you know, classic Murray climbing the mountain and finally reaching the top. And to be describing that and then that commentary was used sort of when he won BBC Sports Personality of the Year a few weeks later, you know, just to things like that are a great buzz for a commentator. You know, I can't say otherwise. I think just for having, there are some matches I've done where there might not have been hardly anybody listening at all, but I am just having the time of my life because of what sort of match it is. And my mind goes back to Stan Wawrinka against Novak Djokovic at the Australian Open about 7 years ago, where they went five sets deep into the night and you felt like everybody in the stadium was just having the best time as the best player in the world was taking on this guy who felt like he could pick up mountains and toss him over his back.
And you're
know.
So good at that, David, conveying that to the listener without making them feel left out. Like, oh, we're all here having a great time. You're, you know, somewhere else in miserable, cold Solihull or whatever. You're so great at conveying it and also bringing the listener in. That's when you totally come into your own, I think.
Yeah, that was just great fun. And those sort of matches. And I remember when we had the US Open semi-finals night with Brady and Osaka and Serena Williams and Victoria Azarenka. It didn't matter that it was the middle of the night for the UK and that maybe there weren't that many people up listening, relatively speaking. But the ones that were, you just got the sense they were enjoying it. They were writing in and feeling part of it. And yeah, those sort of moments, you can't create that from nothing. They happen, and then you do your best to convey them.
You do a fine job, David. A very fine job. It's going to come to you, Matt. But can I? Do you have a favourite commentary of David's, oh, Matt?
I mean, I always love David on Kyrios.
Yes.
That's a great combination.
David on Tool People.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to feel bad. I don't know how many of those I've listened to.
They're worth avoiding, Matt, to be fair.
What did you get sent out? You got sent to one this year at Wimbledon, didn't you? It involved a Pelka, I think.
Yeah, I'm a Pelka correspondent. But just on Kyrgios, I think the thing is, when I do his matches, I'm so torn between loving and hating him. You know, not hating him, but hating what he's up to. You know, sometimes his behavior appalls me, and sometimes I absolutely love it. You know, and obviously love his tennis, but I hate how he's not making the most of it. But also, you know, it's all the contradictions are. You can't take your eyes off him, and therefore, as a commentator, I don't think you can ignore him.
Mm. But you know, there are some commentators who commentate the same on every match. Mm. You know, it doesn't really matter who's playing. That is how they commentate. And I always think you, David, are very good at adjusting for the player and getting the feel.
Gear.
The gear, the feel of the match across. Mm. Mm.
And you also don't pretend when something's a stinker.
Yeah.
You don't pretend, you know, you don't pretend it's going to be top billing on match of the day.
No, just say this you is
admit
rubbish.
This is going well, last.
Stick with us, it might change.
Right then, next question comes from Bearcan on Instagram. Hi, I'm a big fan of the tennis podcast. I have on my bucket list to go on a solo tennis watching vacation. Bearcan is our people, folks. I love to watch both men's and women's at all levels and find sometimes a 250 event can be just as exciting as a Masters level event. If you could choose only one whole tournament to attend live at the 250, 500 and 1000 level anywhere in the world, which would you choose? Matt,
Acapulco,
would you like to go
Acapulco.
Oh, right. Okay, David would like to go first. Off you go then, David. he's going loco in Acapulco.
Yeah. They just look like they're having the time of their lives there. As an audience, it's always packed. It's always hot and sweaty. And I just can't get my... I mean, we're talking about Kyrgios. That was peak Kyrgios playing in Acapulco.
And it's always on at rubbish hours of the day for us. Yeah. Here, isn't it? So you'd gain a lot by being there. And
we always used to say about Queens back in the days when it was a 250 that the tournament punches above its weight, and you like that. We liked that feel that it felt like a bigger tournament than a 250 on paper. And when I watch Acapulco, which I think is a 500, that always feels bigger, and the players seem so invested and they care about it. And, I mean, the affection with which Kyrgios talked about it that year he won it. I realised he was going out all hours of the night, having the time of his life and going on a motorboat and windsurfing or whatever in the days. But just generally, it was a buzz and it brought out the best in him. And I just think, imagine being able to just have 10-day trip to Acapulco to just soak it all up and do what you want in the day. I want to do that.
Yes, I was going to say Acapulco, but I was thinking for a solo trip, I'm not sure it would be Acapulco. I think I'd want to experience that with someone. I think that would be best enjoyed together. And, I mean, sounds like we're going, David. And Catherine's going as well.
I'm going without me. Well, Bearcan doesn't actually specify. They say they want to go on a solo tennis-watching vacation, but they don't specify that we're attending solo.
Okay. Well, it would be Acapulco.
Where would you want to go solo? Somewhere just less fun?
Well, I mean, everywhere is less fun, I think, than Acapulco. That's the point. I've always liked the look of Rome, I must say. I mean, I've been to the venue in Rome, and I've been to Rome, and I've just never been to the tournament. And I love watching clay court tennis. That's probably my favourite to watch live, especially just... The rally construction, I think, is fascinating up close. And it's a combined event, which are my favourite. Amazing atmospheres always in Rome. They have a night session as well, don't they? I always think Rome looks like a great one.
So you've both gone for Acapulco for your 500. Matt's gone for Rome for his 1,000. David?
For 1,000, I'd probably go Indian Wells, which I just think is... I think the thing is, I've been to both Indian Wells and Miami. I don't know that many people who like those two the same. You're either an Indian Wells person who likes the lovely, clean, crisp air and the beautiful mountain ranges in the background and lots of space, but it's fairly quiet, you know. Or you like the feeling of Miami and how bustling it is and how much colour there is and different types of atmosphere and action going on. And, you know, certainly the old Miami that was played at Crandon Park before they moved, you could go to South Beach and all that sort of thing. There was a lot more going on. But I would say as well, for a 250, I would look very closely at the back-to-back tournaments after Wimbledon in Gstaad and Umag, which I worked at several years at both. I mean, totally different tournaments, but again, almost like comparing the Indian Wells and Miami thing. Gstaad is in the Swiss mountains and it is absolutely stunning to look at. And the centre court there is called the Roy Emerson Arena because he used to run camps there for tourists and people staying there. And so you've got this beautiful clay court just nestled in the mountains, and it's just a wonderful scene. And then Umag is on the coast of Croatia in the height of the summer. Matches start every day at 5 p.m. because it's too hot in the day. Goes on until midnight. Then all the players go to the local nightclub and they're out all hours. It's and that's just accepted, and nobody minds at all. And I've seen some incredible matches, great atmosphere. Players like Ljubicic, before he was able to get automatic entry into tournaments, he would get wild cards when he was 19 in Umag, you know, to start his career off. And yeah, it's just a brilliant little succession of tournaments, those two.
You could do a Casper Ruud swing, David.
Yes.
Yeah. Pop from one to the other, cleaning up post-Wimbledon on the clay. I'd also say, not actually for the tournament, but I really would like to go to the Tennis Hall of Fame in Newport and be there that week when they do the inductions. And I think that would be pretty special. And I think that would be quite a good solo trip, actually, because there's quite a lot to do there, I imagine.
Mm, that's a good shout. I picked Charleston for my 500. I know it's women's only, but I'm busting to go to Charleston. It just looks fun. I mean, full disclosure, I have just gone fun central. I haven't been on holiday in 2 years. Haven't boarded a plane. I've just shamelessly gone for fun on these choices. So I've gone for Charleston. I thought Acapulco was a 250, so I thought I could have that, but it's 500 and I've got that covered with Charleston. So I'll go for something like, I'll shamelessly go for Los Cabos or San Jose with my 250. Those seem like great holiday destinations. And for my 1,000, I'd like to go for Canada combined. Now, I know they're in two different cities, the men's and the women's, but I'm going to count it as a combined event and sort of say, can I spend half the week in Toronto and half in Montreal? I've been to both those tournaments. I've had great experiences at both. They have great fans and crowds. I love the cities. Montreal in particular is just a great place to be. I like where it is in the calendar, in that it's building up to a Grand Slam. Yeah. And it's fun. So, yes, those are the ones I have gone for. Next question comes from...
How do we say that? Tessina Froze.
Tessina Froze. Thank you, David. Tessina Froze on Instagram says, I know it's kind of cliche, but would really love to know what you guys like to do in your spare time. Do you guys have any hobbies? Who would like to go first? Okay, I'll go. I'm so worried about sounding fantastically boring and basic with this answer. I mean, I watch a lot of sport. I spend a lot of my time watching sport, obviously largely tennis, but I watch a lot of football. I watch a lot of cricket. I mean, I'm about to seriously taper down my cricket watching because we're getting spanked in the Ashes. But in better times, I watch a lot of cricket. I've been watching a lot of Formula One this season. When the Olympics are on, I will watch, you know, non-stop athletics and swimming and all the rest of it. I do spend a lot of time watching sport. I have a dog, so I walk the dog a lot. And, you know, all the normal human things, friends, family, cinema, theatre, restaurants, food, fun times. And I have a Peloton bike, which I don't talk about it because I don't like to be... Those people that talk about the exercise they do, those are the worst people. But yeah, I have a Peloton and I love it. I use it most days. I have favourite instructors, and it's been an absolute godsend. Through, I actually, weirdly, I had ordered it just before the pandemic came in, so I'd sort of made the decision pre-pandemic. But obviously, it's completely come into its own during COVID times and everything. Yeah, it's brilliant. Billie Jean doesn't like it. She always leaves just a tiny gap in the door to the room that the Peloton's in, and she, just big enough for her to poke her head through and make me feel guilty. And sometimes when I'm doing stuff on the yoga mat, she'll come and join in an unhelpful way. Who's next? Who would like to go?
Well,
wow, everyone's rushing to answer this one, aren't they?
I'm massively into sport as well. I've now got a season ticket to see my beloved West Bromwich Albion with my son. And I've got into NFL, which Catherine is also a massive fan of.
It's next on my list, David. I'm going to try again. That was Freudian, wasn't it? I'm going to try again with NFL.
But funnily enough, a bit like with this podcast, I seem to, no matter what interest I have, I end up with a podcast that goes with that interest, I think. And I end up sort of, that becomes a way of, I love cooking and I love listening to a podcast whilst cooking or something like that. I find that very relaxing and therapeutic because, I mean, unfortunately, one of my hobbies is probably this. So I seem to spend most of my waking hours trying to think of podcasts to do or things that we need to do regarding this show. So I kind of have to make myself stop in order to you know, not go over the edge.
Can vouch for that, yeah. Folks.
I don't really have many hobbies, to be honest with you. I just sort of do all this.
We do a lot of watching and talking about tennis, don't we?
Yeah.
Matt, save us. Make us sound more interesting.
I mean, gosh, yeah, we are basically just watching sport is sort of what we all do. I like going to sport. That's something I like a lot. I've had a Fulham season ticket for over 10 years. I miss that a lot we're still in the pandemic, but just going to tennis events, going to sporting events, I would consider that a hobby. I always think that's a really special feeling, being at a live sporting event. And live events in general as well, actually. I really like, whether they be talks or the theatre, I just like being somewhere live. I won't talk about my running, because I'm not going to be one of those people.
But turns out we are those people now, Matt. Yeah. We should set up a WhatsApp group just called, like, you know, Working Out. And send screenshots of Strava.
Yes, that's been my sort of thing for this year, getting into running. And then reading, honestly, would be my other one. I read a lot.
Matt makes book recommendations which will devastate you, tear apart your soul, and you'll never be the same person again.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking. And I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
That's my experience.
Well, I discovered Catherine also likes sad books. And I've recommended them to her.
If it hadn't been for your last... Oh, actually, no, you made a recommendation last week that I've bought and it's sitting on my bedside table, but I don't know if I'm feeling strong enough for it yet, Matt. I'm still genuinely recovering from the last book recommendation that Matt gave me, which is still on my bedside table, and I still think about it probably most days.
Whilst I collect recommendations from both of you that I never seem to really get to. Although I have just got into third series of Succession, having done the back catalogue, so I'm 2-3 episodes into that. How's Cobra Kai going,
Catherine? Does Succession count as a hobby?
I don't know. Is it? I mean, given the amount of spare time I seem to have, yes, it is.
If Succession counts as a hobby, then yes, Succession is my hobby. Yeah, anything else, Matt? Any other book recommendations for the listeners?
Shall we reveal what those books were that we've teased already?
Yes, yes. If people are listening to my description of having their soul ripped apart and thinking, oh yeah, I want some of that. It was A Little Life by Hanya Yanagihara. And it is the best book I've ever read, but it will tear you apart. So something to consider for the next inevitable lockdown, folks.
I think I might just swerve that one.
For looking for a pick-me-up. And what's the new one, Matt, that is sitting on my bedside table waiting to tear me apart?
It is The Great Believers by Rebecca Mackay.
There we go. Yes. Okay, so that's what we do in our spare time. You now know exactly how boring.
This is why we do so many podcasts.
Yeah, I feel like Tessina Froese probably thought one of us was going to reveal that, you know, we were into Irish dancing or shanty singing or, you know, were amateur magicians or something in our spare time. Alas, no, we're very boring and predictable. Next question comes from S. Sipsky on Instagram. And it is, which tennis rule would you change if you had the power? Less faff, Sipsky, less faff. I'm going to umbrella that into one rule. All rules governing faff should be adjusted to reduce faff. Matt, you go.
Well, I was going to say the net rule on serve, and I think that would be a way of reducing faff.
Yep. I think co-signed.
I think the more I think about this, the more I realise so often a let on a serve is marginal and makes no difference whatsoever. And it you know, the point purely gets stopped because that's the rule, even though it's really made basically zero impact on the point. I've seen it in junior slams where the, you know, if it hits the net on serve, you play on. It's quite a fun additional element, and very, very rarely does it just stop, you know, does it just plop over the net and end the point that way. And honestly, even if it does, well, we do that in rallies, so why would we not do it in serves? I think generally I wouldn't change that many rules about tennis, but that feels like one that could change. Probably wouldn't have a massive impact on the sport. I think we'd probably just get used to it, and you'd think, oh, fine, we play nets on serve. Like, I don't think it's groundbreaking. I just think it would be a small improvement.
I want to have open mics in every coach's box and an option on your TV to turn that on and off, in terms of whether you can choose to not listen to that. I want to have much more interactivity in that regard, or much more control for the viewer. I know that's not specifically a rule of the sport, although I think open mics is. And if you're going to allow coaching, then fine, okay, but we have to hear every single word that is uttered in that coaching box, or have the option to. The TV viewer has the option to have just ambient sound of a crowd and no commentary or just open mic and ambient sound, so you've got some control. I'd love to see that, and so that everybody can be a bit more selective, but also that there's no hiding place.
A bit like with the F1, where you can listen in to the interactions between over the radio, over the team radio.
Mm.
A bit more of that flavour.
And that's something tennis has dabbled with, I suppose. You know, put the toe in the water a bit. You know, Laver Cup has done that a bit. ATP Cup is probably, that's probably the thing it does best, I think, actually. Mm. Really bringing us into those team conversations. And I agree there. I like hearing them. They are fascinating. But I'm interested how it works in non-team events. I guess the next gen finals, we've seen it a bit, but it seems to be team
be
events
quite
where
a lot
they've
of,
tried it.
You definitely want to have an unfiltered feed available, David, rather than like with the F1, where obviously there is a producer in the gallery listening across all the time, and they will bring something to the attention of the viewer if it's pertinent or interesting. You know, you'd be listening to a lot of, oh, I need to go to the loo, or, oh, you know, my wife's
David
just texted
that.
Me. Right, okay.
I think it's optional, though. You wouldn't have that just as something you couldn't get rid of. I think you need to have a version that is controlled by a director, so that they are selecting what's worth going in the main broadcast. But then you could have three or four different red button options, so that you either have it all the time or you don't have it at all. You know, these would be interesting variations.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because that insight, that sort of real feeling of peeking behind the curtain, you don't get much of that in tennis. It's one of the things that's really drawn me in about F1, the way the broadcast is presented with the viewer in mind, or where the whole product is presented. And I know a lot of people think that went too far in the final race of the season, that the product was put ahead of the integrity of the sport. That's a whole other debate, but that has drawn me in, and I do think tennis needs to do more of that. But as you say, there has been dabbling with, like, miking up the players. I don't think works. I know it's been done at exhibitions and so on, but I don't know. I don't think miking up the players ever really works. I do think the microphone at the umpires, you know, sometimes when the physio comes on for an injury timeout and the commentator goes, let's see if we can listen in, you know, it shouldn't be, oh, let's see if the microphone is positioned well enough that we can, you know, either we are allowed to hear that, in which case it should be absolutely technically set up so we get it instantly and it's audible. It shouldn't be, oh, let's play the fun game of seeing what we get here. That always seems a bit weird to me. But yeah, okay, co-signed on all of that. If I had to pick one FAF-related modification, it would be that when a match is called and a player doesn't show up on time, forfeit. Your match has been called. You have, you know, depending on what the journey is to the court or whatever, you have 90 seconds or whatever. If you don't show up, that is a forfeit. Done. The ludicrous scenario of, you know, cutting to pictures of one player waiting around in the tunnel while another one's having a last-minute nervous wee or whatever. Outrageous.
Catherine's whole disposition changes when she starts talking about Faf and Dennis.
Outrageous. Well, you didn't. Can you imagine Solihull Simon, David, just waiting around at the net 10 minutes for you? No. He'd say, sorry, David, you didn't show up. and imagine if there were millions of TV viewers on you. I know that's a stretch, but...
Ow.
But think how gutted all those millions of TV viewers would be if the match just wasn't on.
Yeah, Matt, exactly that. Yeah.
But that wouldn't be what would happen. What would happen, Matt, is
deterrent.
That players would show up on time.
Yeah, we always
and it
show
really
up on
wouldn't
time.
It really wouldn't be that big an imposition on them.
No, I agree. I do agree. It is ridiculous. And actually, the whole issue of start time I find annoying in tennis. Like, the first match of the day is on at 11 o'clock. The first ball is normally 11:15.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're sort of instantly on the back foot. Get them on the court before 11 and have them start at 11.
Preach. Oh, my God. Just, yeah, it's so ludicrous when you break it down. Yeah. Okay, we need to move on before I really nosedive into Faf territory. Okay, the final question picked out by Mike is... to say, I'm fascinated by team events in tennis. And we had a question on the Laver Cup, didn't we, last week? He says, from the ATP Cup, Davis Cup, Hopman Cup, and even the Laver Cup, I think the team dynamic is fun and refreshing in an otherwise individual sport. I'm curious, what would be your vision if we mastermind... What would be your vision if you were the mastermind, behind creating a team-based World Cup of Tennis to be played every 4 years? My dream would be to have the top 16 or 32 countries play an ATP Cup-style format, with each match-up being played as one men's singles match, one women's singles match, and one mixed doubles match. What do you think would be the top three countries in this format? Okay, so we've got two different subsets of the question here. So let's go with the second part first. In that format that Mike describes, top 16 or 32 countries, one men's singles, one women's singles, one mixed doubles, who do you think would be the top three countries in this format?
Definitely Russia.
Yep.
Spain.
Yeah, Spain. Yep.
Those would be the top two, I think. Yeah, because I'm thinking Badosa and...
Yeah,
Muguruza, and then all the Spanish players, including young and experienced, and obviously Russia have won both Davis Cup and Billie Jean King Cup and ATP Cup.
US are strong if you combine men and women, yeah. I think, and probably getting stronger over the next few years. They've got some young players, I think.
I mean, in terms of the format, I think I quite like the idea of it being the best of five rubbers in each match, so that you can still have men's doubles and women's doubles as part of it as well. Yeah, I mean, look, pretty much you've nailed it. I think it's every 4 years. It's a world group or a sort of finals event, but then between them you have a qualifying process that could allow you to have some home and away, but you've just got to combine these events and distill them so that you get everybody on board behind the one big one, and bring in men and women. And I think it absolutely could work if there was enough investment, not just financially but just of emotion and intent and effort there is definitely something there. There's a massive missed opportunity because tennis is the best sport in the world in terms of having men and women both playing it, in terms of its appeal, its popularity, its established nature already. And what a waste that it doesn't already exist in the way that it should.
Mm. And I always find it interesting when we do these listener questions specials, there's inevitably a question about team tennis. I think people like it and I think they care about it. And I remember earlier in the year, I'm sure David had a really detailed proposal of his World Cup of Tennis, and we sort of talked about it then as well. And it comes up a lot. People, I think, realise that the current state is inadequate or disappointing or doing the sport short. You know, we've got lots of good team events, I think, but we haven't got one great one. And yeah, I do think, yeah, every 4 years, maybe even every 2 years, you could do a World Cup of Tennis with qualifying on the year you're not playing, and make it combined. And I agree, I think I would like to see men's and women's doubles in there as well. But yeah, this is the right sort of thing. But as David says, it requires investment of all kinds, and it requires unity in tennis, the like of which we don't really see. So those are the sort of things holding it back, I think.
I think what we all want, what the one significant or the biggest desirable for a World Cup of Tennis is for it to matter. For it to matter to the viewers, for it to matter to the players. We want everyone to care about it as much as possible. And there are lots of different ways to engineer that. I like all of your suggestions. I really think just reducing the frequency of them occurring will do a lot of that for you. It's the one simplest mechanism to just make it matter more, make it less frequent. I think, as you say, Matt, even every 2 years, I mean, look at how much the Ryder Cup matters in golf. And obviously...
And I mean, I think you could have an amazing team event every year if there was not another one that's quite similar in 6 weeks or
I don't think anybody, even a fervent Laver Cup fan or, you know, even the ATP, or I just can't believe that there is anybody in tennis that, you know, in their heart of hearts would say the current situation is anywhere close to ideal. They'd say if you were starting from scratch, you would design a separate Davis Cup and Billie Jean King Cup, and then you'd have the Laver Cup a few weeks before it, but occupying a spot in the calendar where Davis and Fed Cup, a Billie Jean King Cup qualifiers could be. And then you'd have an ATP Cup a few weeks later, but not a corresponding WTA Cup. And there would be a distant memory of a Hopman Cup that got canned sort of straight after having its best ever event. Nobody's designing that from scratch. Are they? I mean, it's so tiresome, isn't it? We've been having this conversation at regular intervals for so long now, and there's no end in sight. There were rumours this year, weren't there, that the ATP Cup was going to combine with something else, but obviously that hasn't happened. The ATP Cup currently, as it stands, is full steam ahead. So. Will we be having this identical conversation in 12 months' time, folks? Will anything have changed?
I thought you were going to say 12 years' time. I mean, I could imagine that. Tennis doesn't move very quickly, and so many things repeat themselves.
Matt, any more optimism?
Nope.
Great. Mike... We'll see you back here in a year to answer your question again with the exact same answer. Brilliant. But everybody can't wait. Oh, this has been our last tennis podcast of the year, folks. Don't worry. We'll be back very soon because tennis is back very soon. It all gets underway. And we'll be talking about it very soon indeed. Who knows how the next few weeks are going to unfold. I'm not going to ask for predictions on that front because it feels impossible at this stage. But fingers crossed that the Australian tennis season proceeds. Everybody just stay safe as you possibly can. These are challenging times. But just to uplift you in these challenging times, I have news of Slugger, our mascot for the week. Slugger is a 7-year-old cavoodle, which is what Americans call a cavapoo, which is what Billie Jean is. Slugger is owned by Jay, a long-time listener and supporter and communicator with us. We love Jay. And up until this point, I had no idea that Jay was keeping Slugger a secret. Slugger, I mean, there's a picture here taken on the 12th of July 2014, and it could be Billie Jean, that little face. And we got another picture here. Oh, also like Billie Jean before she's had a haircut. And then we've got a more distinguished picture of Slugger, where he looks quite a lot like Magnus, actually, who's, of course, Billie Jean's older brother. See, I left it to the end, David. I was allowed to go big because I left it to the end.
Good work.
Slugger is wonderful. And Billie Jean, who's sat just over my left shoulder, sends much cavoodle love and solidarity to Slugger.
And I had a little story from Jay. Said, weirdest coincidence. I was working at my bookshop at the Queen Vic Market in Melbourne the other day, listening to the latest episode of the Tennis Podcast, when a customer came in and said, oh, that's the Tennis Podcast. That's my favourite podcast. We immediately bonded, Jay said. She and her husband both listened to each episode together, which is a lovely thought. Anyway, I mentioned to listen out for Slugger being the New Year mascot, and she said, oh, I've often wondered who those strange people are putting up their pets as mascots. Now I know one. So big shout out to my bookshop tennis buddy.
Oh, that's so lovely.
Marvellous.
You're not weird people, you're cool people.
You're great.
And I was going to say, if you want to become one of those cool people, then sign up to become a friend of the Tennis Podcast. But am I right in saying all of our pet mascot slots have gone?
They have, yeah. Yeah, all of them for 2022. I mean, all you can still become a friend, but not at the pet mascot level. You can still get shout-outs and intros, etc., but not any pet slots.
They've all gone, folks. They're all gone. But yeah, there are still plenty more slots and rewards available. Of course, the primary reward that every friend of the Tennis Podcast gets is access to the dedicated Friends of the Podcast feed, which features a bonus content throughout the year. There's already one new podcast on there called My First Wimbledon, and there's 6 podcasts from our archive on there as well. There'll be 2 new editions of Tennis Relived before the Australian Open, which are in the planning stage at the moment. So extra pods throughout the year, and you get to be officially our friend, and you get to help and support us and feel our warmth and love, which, you know, I like to think of as priceless. But it is available at various different prices via the link in our show notes. So head there to become a friend of the Tennis Podcast. Sum up 2021 in one word, David. This has gone well, hasn't it?
Promising.
Promising.
Yeah.
We're right at the end of it, David. There's not long for it to deliver on its promise.
But promising for the future.
Encouraging. Okay, great. Okay. Matt?
Unpredictable.
Great.
Other than for Catherine winning the newsletter predictions. I thought I should be the one to say that so you didn't have to, Catherine.
And what a note that is to end on. Yes, my word for 2021 would be victorious. I wish you could see the face that David is making quite now. It's brilliant. It makes it all worthwhile. Thank you so much for listening throughout this year. We'll be back next year, or next week rather. We'll be back really soon. Don't worry, we're not leaving you in the lurch for long. But as always, the podcast has been incredibly important to all of us this year. So thank you for making it possible. Thank you to everybody who's played a part in it all. Patrick, Woolley, Sarah Woolley. Who else would we like to thank?
Jib,
our editor, our new editor. So thank you. Thank you to everybody that's played a part in it all. Hannah
and Andrew on Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a pleasure. This sounds like we're never coming back, doesn't it? We're back next week, folks. Don't worry. So, we have had our mascots, Rogue, Scousel, Mousel and Zeus. Zeus and I, of course, hashtag victorious. Billie Jean has had Billie Jean King. We have had Chris Albert Lee, our executive producer and all around top bloke. And for this week, we have had Slugger, the lovely mascot, and we've had Mike Lee, our guest editor, for these listener question specials. So thank you, Mike. You've done us proud, as have you, for listening this year. We'll be back in 2022.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.